Hello, and welcome to the School of Attraction podcast. I'm Damien Deeker, and I'll be talking to you about a range of topics from dating, attraction, masculinity, sexuality, life philosophy, and much, much more. So, without any further ado, let's get started. I hope you enjoy listening to today's podcast just as much as I've enjoyed creating it.
And welcome back, everyone, and thanks so much for joining me again today in today's episode. I've got someone, again, who I always find is interesting, because of course I do, because I'm not going to have someone here who I don't think sounds interesting. Her name is Florence Ann Romano, and she is a personal growth strategist. She's a philanthropist, and she's written a book that I think sounds interesting, not just for me as a dating coach, but actually in my personal life. It's a topic that I've talked about with my friends a lot, so I'm interested to talk about it a bit. It's called Build Your Village. It's a guide to finding joy and community in every stage of life. Florence, welcome to the show.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And it was interesting, you know, because when you reached out and said, hey, you know, would you like to interview me? There are a bunch of topics that were sort of a list of things that you would specialize in or I think would like to talk about. And there are a couple of things that for me are not just personal because they hit me in my own life, but personal because I think for my clients, they're going to be quite important. And, you know, an important thing you talk about in your book, I believe, is the importance of friendships and the connections that we have. And something that I've talked about a lot is that there is a real, there's a loneliness epidemic. I suspect it's worse for men than women, but you might correct me on that. And a lot of the men that I work with, I think they start pursuing relationships with women before they have connections with men. And I think that's not necessarily great for them, or rather platonic connections, I should say. And I think that's the wrong way around. I'm interested, first of all, to ask your thoughts on that. Like, do you think, why should men be pursuing close friendships before they even start to date? Or do you disagree with that?
I absolutely agree with you. You know, here in the States, and I'm sure maybe it's a movie you know, Damien, have you ever watched the movie I Love You, Man, with Paul
Yes.
Rudd and Peter Sagal? Okay, love that movie. And I think it is so true of male relationships most of the time. You know, for those that haven't seen it, Paul Rudd is getting married and his fiance kind of says, you know, I really don't have a lot of male friends. Do you have any male friends? And kind of goes out dating to find male friends. And it's really funny to watch. But I do see that a lot of men struggle with the idea of connection. And I can give you an example that is perhaps not the season of life that everybody is in currently, but certainly I think a very popular season of life. So my dad is in his mid-70s. And my parents were married for 40 years, 40, Damien. They have been divorced for now for 4 years. And my father read my book after it came out and said, you know, I realized I don't have a village. And I said, why, Dad, do you think you don't have a village? And he said, well, I didn't realize that all my social relationships were pretty much wrapped up or tied to your mother. And I said, well, that's very typical, you know, oftentimes in divorce. But also, what are you going to do about it now that you know that that's the case? And my father really is not interested in putting the effort in to creating those platonic relationships. He's dating, but I think he's also found that that's not necessarily satiating everything he needs in terms of connection, because he really doesn't have those friendships. And we, like you talked about in the beginning, we were built for that. As human beings, we were built for community. We were built to be there, support each other, to help raise one another's children. But society has evolved in a way that the emphasis is not there anymore. But then COVID happened and it put connection in the spotlight in a really sobering way.
Yeah, because everybody became disconnected, whether you wanted to or not.
Exactly. But on a global level, though, Damien, we all knew what it felt like to feel disconnected because of COVID. And how often can you say on a global level, we can all understand what that feels like? That's very rare.
I know a lot of people who have never had the experience who have, I think they suffered the worst, because they weren't prepared for it. You know, people, like, I tend to be a loner, and I know it's not healthy for me, and I actively have to push myself to have more connections. But I watched a lot of people suffer a lot more than I did because I was sort of prepared for it beforehand, if that makes sense, mentally, emotionally.
Because you're saying because you were a little bit more of a loner, that retreating, it was not so hard for you to
Correct.
Do, to disconnect.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes. Right.
But one thing I think, and this is, I'm interested to hear your answer here, because I think a number of my clients would be introverts. I mean, the majority of my clients are introverts. I'm a dating coach. That's probably not a surprise of a correlation there. But how would you address the idea? Because a lot of introverts will say, but I'm an introvert. I don't want to go out so much. I don't want to be as social. How would you determine the difference between someone who's just introverted and not so interested around being around people and people who have formed a bad habit of being antisocial? Like, how would you help someone determine which is which for them?
Well, I think it's important to understand that it's not about the quantity. It's the quality of the friendships. It's the quality of the connection. It's the quality of the people and the choices that you're making. Because, yes, you know, I'm an extrovert. I know that people tell, you know, I'm definitely not a wallflower, but I definitely love my alone time too. I'm like the first person, Damien, to be so happy when plans are canceled. I don't care if you tell me on my way to the plans while I'm in the car, I'll be so happy to turn that car around and go home and put my pajamas on. But the reason I think I'm like that is because I have a kind of overly articulate, overly verbal, you know, kind of visible life in that way. So when I get the chance to unplug, I jump at it. And I probably, you know, I could talk to you about dating for hours because I'm single. I'm 38. I've never been married. I don't have children. And I would love to do all that one day. But I also know that I have to take my own advice about what I say regarding building friendships to actually do that when it comes to me dating. Because believe me, I wish I could just sit home and have that guy just pop up at my door. But I know that's not going to happen the same way you're not going to find your people or your village or your friendships by just sitting home watching Netflix. So for that, to kind of round out that question, I think you have to decide, again, what is the quantity versus quality of the equation. You don't have to go out 7 nights a week in order to be social. You can pick and choose what it is that you're going to do and who you're going to spend your time with. And you should be discerning about it. But all of a sudden, just going out and packing your schedule full of things to do, it's not necessarily going to bring you joy.
No, and not going to the extreme would bring me a lot of misery, I think.
Right.
But,
yeah,
exactly. It's a strange thing as a guy. You know, if I give you an example, I have to push myself to go out. But it's such an odd thing because when I do, like when I, 2 weeks ago, last week, sorry, I go out with friends rock climbing and I haven't been around just guys in a while, you know, and it's just guys, just a group of six guys. And I came home feeling, you know, my girlfriend looked at me and she's like, what happened tonight? Well, something weird happened, right? What's going on? And nothing happened. It's just that I felt really good after having just had a moment to be guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this need I have, and I don't know I have it until I'm experiencing it. And then I think, oh God, I need this so badly. I need more of this than I'm giving myself.
It gave you a charge. It gave you a replenishing of some kind, and you didn't realize you were missing it necessarily. But I guarantee you, Damien, you probably knew that you were feeling some sort of depletion. You just probably couldn't put your finger on what it was, but then you had that evening with the guys and you're like, that's what it was. That's what made me feel better. And I didn't realize that's what I needed to make me feel better. What is that? What did you get? You got connection in something that is outside of your romantic relationship, which is why both of those things are important and both serve different purposes.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think it's so easy to just forget that you need friends? I know it's not just me. Yep. You know, I think guys, again, more commonly do this, but why is it so easy to forget that need?
I think we get, especially men, and forgive me, men out there, for making a blanket statement about you all, but I think you, especially when you're in a relationship, let's say, you tend to put your focus and your time and your energy on that significant other. And that's wonderful. And we all, you know, we always want to make our significant other feel like they're the priority and they're important. But I think where we get tripped up is when we give our all and that person is kind of our whole world, our whole life, then it's unfair to also that person that we're putting all of that emphasis on them, because then you're looking for that reciprocation. You're looking for them to come back and nourish you that way. And that's where I feel we can have a lot of challenges in romantic relationships, because if you make someone else your everything, you're almost going to be setting them up to fail, because that is an unfair burden to put on them. We have friends for different reasons. And, you know, there's the friend you're going to go out with and have a really good time and maybe have a few too many drinks. There's going to be the friend that's going to give you the tough love. There's going to be the friend that's there with you during a big life transition. There's going to be the friend you confide in that you tell your secrets to. And just because those friendships, those characteristics of those friendships, those attributes of those friendships, all of those don't translate to your romantic relationship, it doesn't mean that that romantic relationship isn't valuable or isn't healthy for you. Not everything you need can be found in that one person, the same way that not everything we need can be found in one friend. There's a reason we compartmentalize.
I think for me, at least, it's so dangerous if I just have my partner and nobody else. I feel like I lose myself if I don't have other friends. Like, I'm a pretty, I know who I am. I'm not a mixed, I'm not someone who's kind of vague on his sense of self. But if I'm just with my partner for too long, I start to lose that, because you have debates, you have conversations, you have these little arguments, and you start to gaslight yourself a little bit. Like, they can be the best partner in the world, but you can't help but doubt, wait, am I doing the right thing? Is my opinion valid here? Like, what? You can't help it. It's not about the partner. It's about, I need those external stimuli, those external conversations with other people to say, you know, either, yes, Damien, you're being an idiot, or, you know, like, actually, no, it's perfectly reasonable what you're saying here.
And well, Damien, really, can I ask you? Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Pardon me.
No,
go ahead.
For it. No. I was just going to say, and for the health of a relationship, I need that, because I've had it before, especially when I was younger. And you end up, because you lose your sense of self, you also lose your ability to stand up for yourself and keep your self-respect in a funny way. At least I do. And I suspect it's true for most people. Self-protection. And I think a lot of guys that I work with, they've been guilty of that in the past, and they've lost themselves, and they hate themselves for it. And having friends would have helped a lot.
And I think also, too, well, let me ask a question before I give this commentary. When you were with your gents the other day, when you were with your buddies, what does that, you don't have to tell me the details of the conversation, but what do those conversations look like with your friends?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my friends were relatively, these aren't even guys I knew that well. One of them is a good friend. The others I didn't know that well. But I'll give you an example of something that for me meant a lot in this conversation, was that my partner is Latin. That makes jealousy a much bigger factor in the relationship, in a level that I'm not used to. I'm used to being very laid back with that stuff. And one of the guys there, my good friend there is from Nigeria, and another guy there was dating a Brazilian woman. And between us, we kind of shared experiences of, yeah, it's weird. For him, the Nigerian friend, it was weird to come here where everyone's so laid back. And for the other guy, who was Israeli, who was dating a Brazilian, he was like, this is so strange. Like, he's been with her for 3.5 years,
wow,
loves her like crazy. But
what a cultural, like, melting pot. Oh, wow.
But for me, it made me think, wow, I'm not so weird now. Like, struggling with this is okay for me, because of, you know, and it also made me feel like my partner is not so crazy. You know, it gave me balance on everything. Because you can't help it. You kind of get stuck in this bubble. And you're like, are they crazy? Am I crazy? No one's crazy. It's just, so it made me feel a lot more balanced coming back to the relationship. And that's an example of the kind of experience that I had, was just that little sharing was big for me, at least.
But that word you just used, Damien, is what I guess I'm going to concentrate on, because I appreciate that you and your buddies are having conversations where you are sharing. Because that word sharing is not necessarily consistent or traditional, maybe in male friendships or relationships. You know, when my parents were married, I remember they had gone out for this evening. You know, it was something associated with my dad's business, and it had been years since my parents had seen some of these people. My mom sat with the women, and all the women were talking about all these major changes and things in their lives and unbelievable updates. And my dad, when they were in the car later going home, my mom was saying, did you know about so-and-so, about this, about that, the blah, blah, blah. And my dad was like, no, oh my gosh, no, oh wow. And these are all, my dad spent time with all the husbands and none of this came up. I mean, major life situations. And my mom goes, what were you guys talking about? And he goes, I don't know, college or the old days or this, that. Like none of this came up. And so it just was such a juxtaposition and such a really accurate illustration of how different men and women connect. And so when I hear you talk about the fact that you are using your friends as sounding boards about things that are going on in your relationship and sharing those feelings or those emotions. Men sometimes don't like to use those words. It's like the other F word, right? Don't say feelings to me. And, you know, I like hearing that though, because that's the basis of connection there that you had. And you're proving that at least in your circle of friends, connection is important.
Yeah, it is. But I find it is very hard. I think I find it very hard. I know I'm not alone in saying that as a guy. I find it quite hard when you're not a teenager anymore and you're not in your early 20s going out drinking regularly. I find it quite hard to make connections with other males. You know, if I go somewhere, we can talk, I'm fine. Like, I'm a chatty guy and we can talk about interesting things. But actually connecting, feeling seen is maybe another way to put it. I find it much harder to accomplish that with men that I've just met than with women that I've just met. Like, I find it easier to meet a woman somewhere and we'll talk about something, then suddenly we'll have this deep conversation. And I find that, and then in that you create a friendship because, like, hey, we kind of see things from the same angle and this is a cool person. I find it harder to accomplish that with a guy. I can meet a guy and talk to him for half an hour, and I'm like, yeah, he's a nice enough guy. But I don't really feel connected to him. It's just like, hey, he's a nice enough guy, you know? And that's hard because it makes it hard to create that friendship. I don't know if you've heard that a lot from maybe men and women both have that after sort of 30, 35, but I find it quite hard to create those new connections with guys at least.
With guys and with girls, I would say that adult friendships are very difficult, not very difficult, but can be more challenging to secure because think about your environments as an adult. You're not necessarily in school anymore. You're not meeting people in, like you said, like this social way where you're out at bars all the time and, you know, constantly meeting new people. If you're not meeting people through work, this is the same thing goes for dating. If you're not meeting people through school or through work or through other friends, then how exactly are you meeting people? And think about, you mentioned my book, the reason the subtitle is about, you know, finding joy and community in every stage of life is because think of the stages you go through in life. You're talking about something very specific about adulthood. But then think about the people who are empty nesters or who are divorcing or who even are going through grief and death. Their villages, their communities are burning down. Their villages are being lost. It's actually one of my chapters in the book about when the village is lost. And the village is lost for lots of different reasons. And so there's a lot of rebuilding then that needs to go on in that season of that person's life. And that is so similar to the rebuilding sometimes that we have to do just in our 30s and 40s when friendship and connection is not as easily attainable as it was before. It's not as baked in or built into our lives as it used to be. So that's the common denominator in terms of community building is you never kind of age out of it. Because there are going to be different seasons of your life that make you evaluate your connections. And whether you're 80 or 18, sometimes those same rules apply.
Yeah, I don't feel like I need community less now than I did when I was younger. It's actually something that I miss. And this is, I guess this is why your book also was of interest to me, was actually for two reasons. One of those was just because outside of dating, I often think one of the things that makes having children so difficult is that we don't have a community, and we're built to have a community that supports us through exactly. that whole process, which I'm sure you talk about in your book. But the second that really interests me is that, you know, I lived overseas for a while in a lot of different countries. And I spent a good bit of time in Bali, and there was a massive sense of community there amongst the expats, and the, you know, everyone lived relatively close to each other. And we would meet all the time, and you could just say, hey, who wants to have dinner today? Who wants to have lunch today? And bam, 8 people would turn up, 9 people would turn up, and totally different people. But, you know, you all accepted each other for your differences and your weirdness. It was just the vibe of the culture that existed there. And I loved that. I miss that. I miss having that sense of these are my people, and not just 2-3 friends, but having a larger group. Maybe you're not close with everyone, but that everyone's part of the group. And I feel it strongly. And I suppose I'm interested more about your book and what you talk about with that there, because I think not everyone's experienced it. Until I experienced it, I didn't realize how nice that felt, how nice it was to feel like you're a part of something. Most people don't have large extended families anymore, and we don't have close connections with families. And that's changed a lot, especially in the West as well. Tell me more about just that, or as you talk about it in your book, and what you found as you're researching for the book. And
well, I always talk about that proverb, and you've heard it too, Damien, I'm sure. You know, in the States, we say it quite often, it takes a village to raise a child. It's the oldest proverb in the world. Every politician and diplomat and anyone has ever said it, you know. But I wanted to chop that in half. It takes a village. Because what about the people that don't have kids? Do they not deserve to find their people? Do they not deserve to find a community? And the answer, of course, is, of course, you know, they do. Of course, they deserve to find their people. I am an example of that. But I feel in a lot of ways, I in my life have experienced community in a very multifaceted way. I grew up in an old fashioned, old school Italian family. My grandparents lived with us growing up. So I am from that very traditional village, you know, where not your immediate family was around. My first best friends in the world were my cousins, you know. So I do, you know, have that nostalgia of what that village felt like back in the day. But as I grew up, I realized that not everybody was born into what I was born into. And I was blessed. I was lucky. But if you're not born into it, does that mean you don't deserve it? Well, of course you deserve it. So then how do you empower people, encourage people to go and find it for themselves then if they didn't have it when they were growing up? And that's part of what I do in the book, is trying to encourage you and to empower you to understand that you do deserve it, no matter your socioeconomics, religion, race, creed, that you deserve to be able to find your people and choose that connection for yourself. But also the other side to my life, I was in childcare for over 15 years. I was a nanny. And so even though I haven't had my own children yet, I was a parent figure, a caretaker to many, many, many children, and had a very bird's eye, specific, unique view into the family unit and what makes a family unit work and what is challenging to that family unit. Why are values so important when discerning the different people that you allow into your life? And what about the people that you don't want to be in your village, that are toxic for the village? How do you create those boundaries and still, you know, try to, you know, work around that person in your life that you can't get out of the village, you know? So I'm going down a little bit of a rabbit hole right now and firing off a lot of different examples, but it's purposeful. It's because I'm trying to articulate that there are many different scenarios and environments that we find ourselves in as human beings that all relate back and connect back to connection. And as we get older, hopefully we start to understand ourselves more, understand what we need more, and can ask for it. But one of the hardest things for people to do in this world, and I think will always be the case, number one is public speaking. And right next to that is asking for help. Asking for help is one of the hardest things for people to do. And that is a big, big reason why people are paralyzed about making connection in their lives, is because they're worried about the rejection that comes with that vulnerability.
Yeah, it's actually, it's a tricky kind of vulnerability, isn't it? Like, it feels, I'm going to use like the, like a bro euphemism, it's an appropriate way to say it, but it feels gay to say, to reach out and say, I want to be friends. It feels childish or something. I don't even think that. I don't think there's anything wrong with a guy crying. I don't think there's anything wrong with these things, but yet it still feels weird to say, I want to be friends, or.
Right. It's still, well, again, I want everyone to go watch that movie, I Love You, Man, because there's so much of what we're talking about. Paul Rudd has to go through this with the guy and with the guys that he's talking to, but it is not as common for men to go up to someone and say, oh my gosh, we should be friends. Oh my gosh, we have so much in common and we should, you know, go get a drink. We should go get a pint or whatever you say in Australia, Damien. You know, it's not as reflexive for men as it is for women. Women are more emotional creatures. And like you just said, there's nothing wrong with men crying. There's nothing wrong with men talking about their feelings. There's nothing wrong with that. Of course there isn't. But there's still, even as evolved as we might be in 2024, there's still a stigma attached to a man being too emotionally aware. Because I think there's, the pendulum swings, right? It's too far. Sometimes a guy has taken it too far. And, you know, I've dated those guys before. You were like, oh my gosh, no, he's like way more emotional than I am. And that's just too much for me. And then there's the guys that don't give you any of it. And you're like, man, I feel like, you know, I'm dating a porcupine, you know? And so we've got to find the moderate part of a lot of things in life, which I think is one of our biggest challenges too as a society today, is moderation is kind of an oxymoron these days.
Mm. Yeah, it is. And something I think I want to add there is that it's been my experience, at least, with where I've been surprised a lot, is that it seems like even guys who are very stoic by nature, you know, in the more like stereotype masculinized way, the more chauvinistic way of male stoicism, usually they're very receptive when someone reaches out to say, I want to be friends, or let's meet up. It's very rare that anyone, you don't see it, that people react strangely to that statement. You know, it's not like asking a girl on a date. Almost people are universally friendly to being reached out to. So yes, it is a strange thing that's so difficult.
Right. I think it's the fear. I think it's the anticipation of the rejection that makes us more paralyzed about it. I think if we all were a little bit more confident about it, then it would change. But I not so many people are willing to lean into that bravery with connection.
Yeah, that's the vulnerability is hard. And maybe there's something to do with our culture, I think, where I definitely find it, and I think maybe that's part of why I find it easier at a party, say, if I meet someone, if it's a woman, to connect, is to demonstrate vulnerability with a woman is much easier. And I think for a lot of men, to do with connections with mom, sisters, female friends growing up, it is much harder to express vulnerability to a guy. I'm awkward still. Like, if I'm in a men's group where it's designed for that, I'm great, I'm fine. But if it's just a guy at a bar, like, I'm not talking about crying in a bar, I'm just talking about being vulnerable about something that's happening for me, I still feel very, very twisted up trying to get that out. And yeah, it's the legacy, I guess, we have as guys.
It is the legacy, I would say. But also, I think whether you're you know, male, female, you know, it doesn't matter, non-binary, because the whole spectrum of things people feel. One thing you have to feel in order to connect with someone is safe. And you may not feel like you want to reveal your deepest and darkest secrets to someone you meet in that bar necessarily, because there's an energy they're giving off, perhaps, that you don't trust, or there isn't enough of an emotional connection there yet where you're going to let that guard down. So I think we can be too hard on ourselves also when evaluating connection, where we reprimand ourselves for thinking, gosh, why am I not able to talk to this person in this really in-depth way or this emotional way? Well, sometimes that takes time. And so I think that we need to give ourselves that grace too, that not everybody you meet deserves to know everything about you, or even deserves to know even a quarter about you in that first interaction. Just like in dating, you know, you're vetting that person. You're sniffing around to see, you know, is there something there that is going to lead me to want to continue to know more and more, but then also me allow myself to reveal more and more? And so that's a common denominator for platonic versus romantic relationships.
Yeah, I I agree. You have that period.
I mean, right,
where
we always we've all been on those dates, right? We've been on those dates before where you're like, why am I talking so much? Why am I telling this person so much? I just met them. I have no idea why I just told those stories about my family or revealed this about myself. But there's something about that connection that made you feel like you could go there. That's not always going to be the case with every person you meet.
No, that is fair. That is fair. And some of my best friendships started like, I don't know if I like this person. It takes a little while, and then you suddenly have this, oh, okay, wow, you're, yes, that's definitely a thing that I've experienced more than once. Something else, it's always a bit of a touchy topic, and it has been important for me, but is this idea of at what point is it okay, because using the metaphor of friendships like dating, at what point is it okay, or should you be breaking up with friends? Because I know for me that I've been through big changes in my life, and there are times when friends don't really have a place in it anymore, either because they're toxic or just because we're just hanging out with them doesn't feed me in a way anymore because our lives are too different and we don't have, you know what I mean? And some, there are always friendships you have for life just because you've shared so much. But at what point, because I know some people are just really quick to ditch friends. And, you know, they'll say, oh, you're just toxic, let's break up. But some people really are toxic in relation, in friendships, right? But what do you have to say about this idea of like pruning your friend group, or, you know, making sure that it's healthy and it helps you rather than holds you back? Because friends can certainly be damaged, just like partners can certainly be bad, worse than being away from them. So what are your thoughts on that?
So in my book, I have six archetypes of villagers that I refer to. And I say that these are the six kind of main characters that you cast in your life, if you're thinking of your life as like a movie or a play. And the six archetypes are people that are going to help you identify, who do I currently have in my village? And what am I missing, perhaps, in my village? And we can get into briefly the definition of these, but I'm going to say them six very quickly for a reason. So accepting, dependable, cheerleader, communicator, organizer, and healer. And I went through that very quickly because generally speaking, when I say the six very quickly, I can see people just like you, Damien, who is starting to, by context clues, think, well, I think I could figure out who the accepting person is or the communicator. You're starting to do that in your head already. Okay, yeah, Sally is, Joe is this, blah, 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 based on context clues. That's great. That's exactly what I want you to do, because that's exactly what this is. You're thinking of, in your life, who do I currently have and how I'm going to cast them into those roles. But what happens then after you do that exercise is you start to think about, all right, you know what? I don't seem to have the organizer, or I don't seem to have the healer. Or you start to look at how you cast those people, and then you look at my definition of who those people are. You think to yourself, I don't think I have these people sitting in the right seats. I think I may need to recast my village, because Joe is definitely not fitting this definition of the accepting villager. I think they're probably more the organizer. And no wonder I'm having a problem with Joe right now. I feel like Joe is failing me as a friend. Well, that's probably because you're not setting Joe up for success as your friend, because they're not sitting in the right seat. So when it comes to firing your friendships, or it comes to moving people around in those roles that you've assigned them, that's a really important piece of the evaluation process for you about how well is your village working for you. And also beyond that, it can't just be all about you. Can't be me, what I want, gimme, gimme, gimme. You have to be thinking about, well, how do I show up in other people's villages? Who am I to other people? Because that work is just as important. So this is really about the reciprocity of that. And also figuring out that at this time in your life, you do need to make some cuts in those friendships and break up with some friendships because they're no longer serving you. And there's a way, there's an art to doing that. There's different levels of that depending on the grievances you have with those friendships. But certainly you have to think about friendships as, you know, for sometimes a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And it's okay. It's absolutely okay and positively necessary for you to look at it and think it's okay if something comes to an end because it was meant to.
I really love the idea of the archetypes. I've never really thought about that before. I've never really thought about the idea that, yes, you can be placing someone in the wrong role. I mean, I've done it in a simplistic way before. You know, I have certain friends that I know are not dependable in any way. They're only good for having fun. And if you just allow them to be that person, then you can be friends with them. But if you want more from them, you'll always be disappointed. But actually thinking in greater context about other roles, that's fascinating because I've never done that before. And yet, yeah, that is right.
And also making the cognizant effort, I would say, to doing that even in your romantic relationships. Like even with your girlfriend, Damien, you could certainly sit there and think, you know, which of these roles is she fulfilling? Because you can have more than one. You can have 10 accepting villagers, 5 cheerleaders, 7 organizers. You know, I'm not putting a number to it. But I think, and if she listens to this, I tell her, my little love, I am not saying that you need to be all 6 to Damien. I'm speaking directly to her now. That's where it's unfair. It's unfair for us to put the pressure on our significant others to think that they have to have all 6 of these qualities in order to be the perfect significant other for you. Because I'll tell you what, so many of my girlfriends will come to me and say, I talk to you about stuff that I would never talk to my husband about. They would never understand this about me. I don't even bother talking about this with them because it is just not, it is not in the cards for us. He is just not the right person to go to for it. And that is absolutely okay. So stop putting that pressure on your significant other to be everything to you. And I'm using these 6 archetypes as an example to you to say, if, for example, your significant other does not have any of the healer qualities, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be a bad person to be in a relationship with. But if you tell me that those qualities of a healer are non-negotiable things for you, or you're not being supported in the relationship like you need, or you're not feeling joyful, or you're feeling depleted, or there is something toxic, then maybe that is part of the evaluation of your romantic friendship, or your romantic relationship of saying, I am missing this, and I didn't realize that this is something I need. I need this element of the archetypes to be present not only in my friendships, but also my romantic relationships. So again, this is all about honesty and vulnerability, and sometimes it doesn't feel so good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's, it's. I think a lot of people break up with partners as well because they expect them to be all those things, because we need all those things in their lives, right? That's what you're saying. Like, we
you need
to
all
find
of them
those
in your
roles,
life perhaps,
but not from the wrong person,
but not in just one person.
No, that'd be expecting too much. And I know I've been guilty of that in past relationships where you need them to be everything because you don't have it, because you need it in your life, and so because you've got the one person in your life, you try to pull
right you're
all
like well then I'm just
them.
Gonna make you do all the work.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
exactly. And now you don't want to go out and do the work. Yeah. And find other people to help you. You're just like, yeah, I'm just gonna dump it all on you, easy.
I really love that, actually. I love those. I'm actually going to grab a copy of your book, just because the concept in general is one that I've talked about, you know, the needing that village and needing that family. I love it. Is that out now already?
Yes, it's out. You can get it anywhere books are sold, Amazon, however you like to order books. You can go to my website, florenceann.com. It's there for you. And I'm very honored. Thank you. That is very humbling.
Beautiful. So just for the guys as well, if you are interested as well, it's called Build Your Village, A Guide to Finding Joy and Community in Every Stage of Life. And that's, I don't know, that resonated with me as a concept. So I definitely look forward to reading it. Florence, thank you so much for coming in today and having a chat with me.
Oh, thank you. What a pleasure. It was a wonderful chat. And time flew by. It felt like I was just sitting talking to a friend. So thank you so much for sharing so much with me too.
Cheers. Thank you.
That's it for today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. Don't forget to check us out at schoolofattraction.com. I highly recommend you check out my comprehensive and free dating personality test, which you can find by clicking personality test at the top of the page. Thanks again for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in my next podcast.